Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Smith rifles that one to Mims. And that's a foot race he's going to win. Touchdown, Baylor. Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards. Five straight games, Anthony, where he's got a touchdown catch of over 20.
That's deflected and picked off Mosley. He'll take it in. It's a pick six.
Bell into the middle of that line, and it's a touchdown.
Big return for Crowder, 85 yards.
Darnold escapes, trying to buy himself some time, fires end zone, it's caught. Incredible play by Darnold.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know who that's?
The Q-inator.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it's Wednesday, which means it's time for Midweek with Manish. Manish Mehta covering the Jets for the New York Daily News. Hey, Manish, that was a fun game to watch on TV the other day, right? Kind of, sort of, a little bit? Not really. Nah, it was terrible.
Yeah, it was a disappointing follow to week one. You figured the Jets, even though they were playing a formidable opponent that, you know, was banged up, you figured they would have a little bit more fight. But when you're down in the 7-0 hole 17 seconds into the game because he gave up an 80-yard touchdown on a standard sweep play, that's discouraging. And obviously things only got worse, even though the bodies kept dropping for San Francisco. Just a miserable game to be a part of, I'm sure, for the players and the coaches. And, you know, I don't know what else to say other than, you know, the rock bottom right now, I think. I mean, perhaps things can get worse this week against Indianapolis, but just an awful start to this season for Adam Gase and company.
And I'll be honest with you, Manish, if it wasn't for the fact that I'm a diehard fan and I can't look away, plus the fact that I obviously do this podcast 7 days a week, I would have turned the game off, or I might have done something else on a Sunday afternoon. And it seems like there are plenty of people that actually had that thought that followed through on it, because the Jets had their lowest rating in years for this game against the 49ers Sunday.
Yeah, yes. There was a publication that kind of outlined how poor the ratings were. And hey, look, it's understandable. Why would you want to sit through that? I'm not a ratings expert at all. But Arrowland said that the local broadcast was shockingly low. I'm not exactly sure how they described it, but it got a 3.9 local rating on Fox. And I know there are other events going on, the U.S. Open, of course. But apparently the 3.0 local rating is what a typical Yankees regular season game gets. And you don't expect that from the NFL. You know, NFL is king, and their ratings are typically much better than a World Series game, let alone a regular season game. So I'll be interested to see what happens on Sunday and see if fans tune in for the Jet-Colt game. I would anticipate that they would, because it's 0-0, right, when you start the game. I'm just curious, you know, if things kind of spiral out of control, how many people will jump ship before halftime's over.
Manish, I think I know what the cure to the Jets' ratings ailings is. Joe Flacco looks like he's about to come back, so that should put some eyeballs on these Jets games for sure on television. What's the latest with Flacco? Looks like he should be back any day, right?
Here's my understanding. Now, Adam Gase said on Monday that Flacco is going to have a checkup early in the week, so you would anticipate it would be Tuesday. That's the player's off day. And that's really the last medical hurdle. My understanding is that he is going to get the medical thumbs up to be a full participant. That doesn't, however, necessarily mean he's going to be ready for Indianapolis. He may, but at that point, you know, once he gets medical clearance, it's really up to the Jets brass, you know, Adam Gase, Joe Douglas, the decision makers in the organization, to determine whether they feel that Flacco is healthy enough to actually potentially take a hit in a real game. I don't know if that they're going to go that way. That, you know, there is that short turnaround with Denver the following Thursday night. Maybe they'll wait until that game, or maybe they'll just hold Flacco out for the next two games. But I think the final medical hurdle should be cleared this week, and then it's really just up to the organization to determine whether they feel confident enough to have Flacco play in a game if something indeed happened to Sam Darnold.
Flacco on his way back, but some of these players on the Jets, unfortunately, on their way out. We've got more injury news. What's going on?
Well, Breshad Perriman, who left that game with an ankle injury, is going to miss one or two games, according to Gase. And again, they've got that quick turnaround following this weekend with Denver coming in on a Thursday night. So it probably makes sense to have Perriman sit out the next couple games. Connor McGovern is probably just as important as that injury to Perriman. He's got a hamstring injury, and Gase described it as week to week. You know, hamstring injuries are obviously tricky, and if you're a wide receiver and a running back, you know, those things tend to linger in terms of being out of the game. But I have seen offensive linemen deal with hamstring injuries and come back pretty quickly. And I'm not saying that McGovern's going to only miss a game. Again, with that quick turnaround, maybe he sits out the next two games and then comes back the following week. I don't know the extent of the hamstring injury, but that's disappointing because, you know, McGovern was brought in, really the only guy on the offensive line that was brought in to be around for certain beyond 2020. He got a three-year deal, which is essentially a two-year deal the way it was structured, whereas Alex Lewis, George Fant, Greg Van Roten, all those guys got de facto one-year deals, and they're kind of on an audition where the hope in the organization was that McGovern would stick around and grow with Sam Darnold. So it's disappointing that after two games he's going to be out, you know, maybe for a small amount of time, maybe for longer. But Gase made it clear that, you know, he wants to make sure, and this is the right course of action. The doctors want to make sure as well that Connor McGovern can play a full game. You know, it's one thing if you're a center and you got a hamstring issue, you can play, you know, a couple snaps here and there, feel pretty good, but you got to be able to play 55, 65 snaps. And until Gase is confident that McGovern can do that, I don't think he's going to be out there. So it's going to be Josh Andrews. He's the guy who replaced McGovern after he was injured against the Niners. You know, they could use Jonathan Harrison. This is a guy who started 10 games last year. I think he started 7 or 8 games the year before, but they, you know, they obviously cut him, decided to go with Andrews, who's also the cheaper option. You know, not ideal. You know, those are the headliners. The secondary's banged up a little bit as well. Arthur Millett has a groin strain, TBD on his availability against the Colts. And Quincy Wilson, now, this is a guy who started for Pierre Desert in week two. He got knocked out. He's in the concussion protocol, so you know, nobody early in the week can definitively tell you whether a player in the concussion protocol is going to be ready for Sunday. You know, probably a game that Quincy Wilson had marked on his calendar because he, you know, started his career as a highly touted pick in Indianapolis, and things didn't work out. So, you know, those are some of the injuries. Obviously, Perriman and McGovern are the headliners. We'll find out later in the week whether Jamison Crowder, who missed the game with a hamstring injury, is going to be able to go. And obviously, the Jets are going to be still without Denzel Mims and Le'Veon Bell, who are on IR.
The Jets are not the only team that has injury problems. The Colts also have some injuries that they have to deal with. Most notably, starting safety Malik Hooker is done for the season with an ACL. This is a sad story, Manish, because this is a player who a lot of people thought was the second best safety in the 2017 draft besides Jamal Adams. Everybody was debating which one would you rather have. Hooker more of a center fielder, Adams more of an all-around playmaker. Adams ended up going significantly higher than Malik Hooker, but still, Hooker played well when healthy, but he just can't stay on the field. This is probably the end for him as an Indianapolis Colt, and it's another one of those stark reminders that in the NFL, nothing is guaranteed. No matter how good you are, all it takes is some injuries, and that can be it for you.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Their defense does take a hit. Now, look, it's a small sample size, of course. It's only been two games, but the Colts do lead the NFL in total defense. They're top 10 in scoring defense. They gave up a fair amount of points to Jacksonville in week one before shutting down Minnesota last week. They're number one against the pass. They're number five against the run. Again, it's only two games, so keep that in mind. But losing Hooker certainly does not help out their cause. They lost Marlon Mack, their running back, who was supposed to be a part of a committee with Jonathan Taylor, the highly touted rookie this year. And Mack is gone after an Achilles injury, I believe, in the season opener. So it's going to be the Jonathan Taylor show. Taylor, I think, is an exceptional player. In theory, he should face a good test against a typically stout Jet run defense. Now, they haven't been stout this year. And even though it's only been two games, they're in the bottom third against the run after finishing second against the run last year. But Jonathan Taylor is a beast, and he's going to be a lot to handle for the Jets. And without Mack, it's going to be Jonathan Taylor for the most part. Naheem Hines is a player that they use out of the backfield as a pass catcher. The Colts also lost Paris Campbell, a young wide receiver. But, I don't think the Jets care about that because, as we just outlined, Scott, I mean, they're banged up plenty on their side of the ball, so they're not going to feel sorry for anyone.
While we're on the subject of injuries, Manish, what is going on with the turf at MetLife Stadium? I know that there's always been a debate about grass versus turf and the possibility of injuries, especially with faster players, but it seemed like this came to a boiling point on Sunday, especially when you had Eric Armstead, one of the best players on the 49ers, openly and publicly talking about the fact that he thought the turf at MetLife Stadium was, quote, trash. Is there something new going on here, Manish? Because I've never thought of MetLife Stadium as unique with this particular problem, but it seems to be a big issue here, especially when you have the 49ers openly complaining. Kyle Shanahan also said something, and you saw all the injuries that went down on Sunday. What is going on here?
Well, you're right that the 49ers weren't happy. And look, when you lose two of your starting defensive linemen within, I think, three plays, with Nick Bosa and Solomon Thomas going down with what turned out to be ACL injuries, you're not going to be happy. What I thought was interesting after the game was that Kyle Shanahan said the players were talking about this before the game. They felt that the turf was, I think in his words, sticky and maybe taller than what they anticipated. And as you said, Eric Armstead did not hold back on social media right after the game, saying that the turf was quote unquote trash. Adam Gase kind of sidestepped that issue. The Jets had only been on that turf for a scrimmage or de facto scrimmage prior to that game. Obviously the Giants, I believe, had a scrimmage as well before they played their primetime game against the Steelers in week one. So not many opportunities for games, but it is alarming. It's hard to say definitively if, an ACL injury or an ankle injury or a groin injury, soft tissue injury, is caused by the turf, unless you're actually, on that field and playing. But clearly 49ers players were not happy about it, and it seemed like that was before the injuries actually occurred during the game. So the NFL evidently is looking into it. The Players Association isn't particularly pleased. Maybe there's some certification issues in terms of was this properly inspected? I don't know the details beyond that, but clearly there's some angst from the player side. And when I say player side, I don't just mean the San Francisco 49ers. I mean from a union side. So it'll be interesting to see what happens moving forward. But this is, supposedly a step up from the turf that was in this building prior. There's an underground heating system, I believe, for the first time. And, it's supposed to be state-of-the-art. It's a field turf, I believe, that the Bengals had used. I don't know if Cincinnati still uses it, but a very similar, if not identical, turf that the Bengals used at one point. So, it's not like the old AstroTurf days from the 80s, but clearly, there are some concerns that are being raised. And when you have this high rate of injury in just two games in this building, I think you would be doing a disservice if you didn't properly look into it.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Manish, Adam Gase spoke to the media yesterday, and a lot of times these coaches and players don't say much during the week, but Gase last week said some things that ruffled feathers, and this week, same thing happened. There were two things in particular that Adam Gase said that I want to get to. Let's start with this one. On the 4th-and-1 play, when asked if Sam Darnold had the ability to audible out of the call that Adam Gase made, he essentially said no, Sam Darnold doesn't have the ability to audible out. How is it possible that in year three as a starting quarterback, Adam Gase wouldn't have the trust in Sam Darnold at this point to audible out of a play like that? Almost any other quarterback who's a starter in the league would have that type of autonomy, no?
Yeah, I thought it was alarming because the sense that I got was that Sam Darnold does, in fact, have the green light to audible on certain occasions. So maybe I just misinterpreted what Gase was saying, but I got a sense that Gase was saying that in that particular situation, Darnold does not have the green light to audible. That's not to say that he doesn't have the green light to audible ever, but in that particular situation, and I don't lay down the ground rules for when Darnold does or does not have the freedom to do that. Obviously, that's an Adam Gase call. But in that particular case, yes, this was Gase's call. And look, honestly, if you're being fair, the call was a good call. There wasn't anything wrong with the call. And if the call was indeed blocked properly, and it wasn't a situation where you're asking too much of your right guard, and that essentially what happened was Greg Van Roten let the Mike linebacker run right by him, and that led to Josh Adams being stuffed. When you draw up a play, if it's overly intricate, maybe you can say that's on the play caller. This was a fairly straightforward play call, I thought, and one that would have worked if the guard actually just blocked the man in front of him. So, that element to this is on Greg Van Roten. However, I agree with you. I think that a quarterback, a young quarterback in his third year, should absolutely have the opportunity to audible in all scenarios, any scenario. And if you just looked at the pre-snap alignment by the Niners on that play, and what happened right after the snap, there was an A-gap hole there for Sam Darnold to easily get a quarterback sneak and get a first down. So, there's a lot of different parts to that. I don't blame Gase for the play call. I do, however, strongly disagree with not giving the quarterback in that opportunity a chance to say, look, I'm looking at the alignment here. I can get this quarterback sneak, no problem. Let me do it. So, a lot to unpack there, but I'm with you. I think that in every scenario, Sam Darnold should have an opportunity, if he sees fit, to change the play at the line.
Plays into the stereotype of Adam Gase, the control freak, and it wasn't the only thing that he said to the media that raised some eyebrows. The other one was when asked about taking deep shots and letting Sam Darnold do a little bit more. He said he had planned to do that later in the game, but then Breshad Perriman went out, and he decided that he couldn't do it because without Perriman, there was no point in even trying. Especially when the Jets got to the point in the game when they were just getting pulverized, how does that logic hold up whatsoever? I get that Perriman is their best deep option, but how do you not at least adjust your game plan to try something, considering that A, you're getting your butt kicked, and B, there were multiple players on that San Francisco defense that were missing that would have made it much more difficult for them to defend a deep shot? We saw the deep shot work very, very late in garbage time with Braxton Berrios, but you have to wonder if they would have at least tried to do it more often once they were down heavy, if they could have at least attempted to mount a comeback.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. If Breshad Perriman is your only threat to stretch defenses, then you have a major problem. At that point, Adam Gase needs to sit down with Joe Douglas and some of the other decision makers and say, how do we construct a roster that says we can't go deep if Breshad Perriman, who has a history of injury, by the way, is not in the game? That's absurd. You need more team speed. I think that's obvious. Braxton Berrios, has some of that speed. But the notion of essentially raising your hands up and saying, well, we can't take deep shots now because Breshad Perriman, who had been a first-round bust for years prior to getting hot in December, if he is not in the game, we have no deep threat, so we're not going to take chances down the field. And that's that doesn't make any sense, right? I mean, that's got to be frustrating on a million levels to not only the players, but the fans, anyone who cares about the New York Jets. That's an unacceptable response. You cannot say that you were going to take shots later. Well, what are you waiting for? You know, you're down 21-3 at halftime. You're down 14-3 fairly early. And by the way, you're not playing the 49er defense at full strength. And that's one of the things that was disconcerting, both after the game and the day after the game, is that Adam Gase was talking as if he was facing the San Francisco 49er defense at full strength. It's almost as if you know, the 7, 8, 9 starters who got hurt didn't get hurt. And so, yeah, I think that's one of the concerns with Gase, is that, look, he does a lot of preparation. I've said this from the beginning. I've been consistent in my belief of this because nobody has given me any indication otherwise. He has a tremendous work ethic. This is not a guy who cuts corners and hits the links at 5 p.m. He works. He works hard. He prepares. He prepares hard. But sometimes preparing hard is not enough if you can't adjust, if you can't open your mind to different ideas. Now, his idea of success during the week is putting your head down, going in your little silo, working, and then showing up and expecting to win. That's just not practical, and obviously the results speak for themselves. There's a reason why he's 30-37 as a head coach, and why 29 of those 37 losses have been by double digits, and why 36% of those losses, 24 games, have been by at least 2 touchdowns. That is borderline inept. That is historically bad, and it's not for lack of trying. The man puts in the time, he puts in the effort. There's just a disconnect when things aren't going perfectly for him. He cannot adjust. And I don't understand why he can't adjust. Scott, you and I were talking about this before the podcast, and you can expound on it, but I thought you raised a good point that sometimes it just feels like Adam Gase is overthinking.
Yeah, no question. I think there are two things to come out of this quote that really struck me. The first is the overthinking aspect here, where he'll say to himself, well, if we don't have Perriman, we can't go deep because they have this guy or they have that guy. Sometimes you just got to go with the flow and adjust on the fly. Circumstances changed. There were players on the defense that came out of the game. And also, as I mentioned before, and as was very clear to anybody watching the game at the time, the Jets were getting their butts kicked, so they had to try something different just to try to survive the game and see if they could do anything to at least mount some sort of comeback in this one. And they decided to just stick to the game plan, which wasn't going to yield anything. The other thing here is, as I was saying, the stubbornness aspect, because Gase came into this one thinking, I'm going to wait until later in the game, and then I'm going to do some deep shots with Breshad Perriman. Breshad Perriman goes out, and then he just throws up his hands and says, ah, well, I don't have Breshad Perriman, can't do anything. To me, it's sort of similar to the kid who wants ice cream before dinner, and he's yelling and screaming he wants ice cream, and his parents tell him, no, if you want ice cream, you got to eat your dinner, you got to eat your vegetables, and then you can have your ice cream if you're well-behaved. And so the kid gets through dinner, and the parents say, okay, you want to go out for ice cream? And then the kid says, nah, never mind, I don't want it now. As if he didn't get what he wanted right then, right there, it wasn't something that he wanted anymore. And that was sort of what it felt like with Gase hearing his answer to this. If he couldn't have things exactly the way that he planned them out ahead of time, then he wasn't even going to try.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as you were talking, I thought of something that happened last year that I didn't report at the time, but it kind of falls almost exactly in line with what you just said. I think that, like, what was happening during those couple games with Luke Falk was that Gase said, look, I don't have Sam Darnold. I don't think I know he didn't tell people publicly that we're giving up, but I think in so many words he conveyed it to his players and coaches that it was probably not going to turn out well. And I know that rubbed people in the building the wrong way. It was such a loser's mindset. Like, we don't have Sam Darnold. We don't have a chance. So let's just get the game over with as quickly as we can. Now, he didn't say that explicitly. I know some of the things he actually said, and it was a different way of saying that, hey, we're probably not going to win here. So let's just kind of, you know, get this over with, and hopefully Sam comes back sooner rather than later. And, you know, that just popped into my head as you were kind of relaying your thoughts on what happened on Sunday. That's a mindset of a loser. That's not a mindset of a leader. That's a mindset that doesn't get you to where you need to go. And I think that's a mindset that people pick up on. There are some very smart people in that building, players, coaches, front office, who have a good sense of, personalities and people and what people are all about. And that attitude, that mindset that you and I just talked about when it comes to Gase, that's not something that people in the building haven't noticed. I'll put it that way.
Hard not to notice. You'd have to basically be not paying attention to not see that. We'll see how it goes this Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts. But if he manages the game the same way that he did against the 49ers, essentially coming out there with a plan to not lose, well, you know how that goes. You plan not to lose and you're planning not to win. And that's what happened against the 49ers. And if he does it again against the Colts, regardless of who's healthy or who isn't healthy, it is going to be a recipe for disaster again. Manish Mehta covering the Jets for the New York Daily News. Thanks so much for coming on. As always, really appreciate it. What do you got cooking over at the Daily News? I'm sure you're working on something right now.
Well, I think I'm going to look into these ratings a little bit more, see what that actually means. I'm curious, actually, to see how fans think about how they'll handle watching games moving forward. And I know that people probably don't want to hear this, but I think there might be a new best quarterback in the AFC East.
Cam Newton, right?
Cam's playing great. And as I said the other night, I'm not, maybe I'm in the minority here, but I am flabbergasted that Cam Newton is good again. I left him for dead the last couple of years when he was banged up. I thought his body was so ravaged by injury that, we were never going to see a relevant Cam Newton again. And even though they lost the other night against Seattle on the last play of the game and he got stopped, I think, I can't say enough good things about how Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick have handled this. I know it's only two games. It's a long season ahead, but it looks like they have revitalized his career. And he might not be the MVP Cam that we remember, but he sure looks like he's going to be a problem for the next few months.
And I'll say this much about Josh McDaniels. I have no idea if he'll be a good head coach when he gets that opportunity again because he failed the first time. But he is an outstanding offensive coordinator, and there's absolutely no debate about that. I will say, Manish, also, I am looking forward to your in-depth look at the ratings. And if I were a betting man, I would say that they're not going to change anytime soon if the Jets keep playing like this. And if you're a betting man, you may want to go over to my bookie and place a prop bet. I don't know that you can bet on ratings, but you can certainly bet on over-unders. You can bet on the game. You can bet on futures. You can bet on anything you want right now at my bookie. Use the promo code OVERTIME. Get up to $1,000 in free play and double your first deposit. That's right now at my bookie. Add excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet at my bookie. Promo code OVERTIME gets you up to $1,000 in free play and you'll double your first deposit. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, please make sure that you give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you haven't already. It's an easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.